I'm speaking today with Michael Skelly, who is a Democratic candidate for Congress in the 7th District in Harris County. Michael, first question I like to ask people is, why are you running for this office?
I'm running because I think I can really contribute something important to many of the challenges that we face today. We're trying to figure out the way forward in energy. We're trying to balance the budget. We're trying to make government more efficient, more effective. And those are things that I have a lot of experience in. So I'm running because I think I got something to contribute.
Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about energy since that's your background and it's also kind of a hot issue these days. You made your living owning a wind energy company. Tell me a little bit about that and tell me what role the government should play in helping, or not helping, to develop alternate energy sources such as wind.
Yeah, okay. Well, I started off in the late 90s, or two of us, and we started a company that by the end of this year will generate enough electricity to meet the needs of almost a million American homes. When we got into the wind industry in the late 90s, it wasn't clear to anybody that this made a great deal of sense. But with a combination of technological improvements, a run-up in other types of energy, natural gas, oil, coal, uranium, all those things have gone up dramatically in cost over the last few years. And so the technology improvements, run-ups, and other sources of energy, and an increasing concern about both the climate implications of our current generation portfolio and the national security implications of where we're getting our energy, all of a sudden this makes a lot of sense. And what we were beginning to feel in the late 90s, I think it's felt throughout the country. So that's my background. And then your next question was with respect to the
what's
the role of government? I think whenever we ask ourselves the role of government, we have to say, okay, what gives rise to the government even being involved at all in this? Because I'm a free market person. I went to Harvard Business School, and like most Harvard Business School alums, we believe in markets. And you have to say, okay, what is it about this market that gives rise for a need for government involvement? Okay, and I think there's really two big things. The first is the national security implications of our energy choices, and the second is the climate implications of continuing to emit huge amounts of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. And people across the political spectrum agree that those are two very important issues. And then the other issue that I would add to that is that energy has big economic consequences. Our energy choices determine how much money we send overseas. And today we're sending, as Boone Pickens is pointing out in ad after ad, $700 billion plus overseas to regimes that are not friendly to us. So there's money going overseas and it's going to people that we're not dying for them to have a lot more money. And finally, the other part of the market, okay, that I think gives rise to the need for government involvement is this isn't a market. On the other end of this market, we have national oil companies and we have something called OPEC, okay? Not exactly a perfect market. So what should the government do? The government, I believe, should do things like it's doing in Texas. Okay, and here in Texas, we have laws on the books originally signed by Governor George Bush that say we're going to get an increasing percentage of our electricity from clean energy sources. And it's due to the legislation originally signed by Bush in the late 90s that Texas today leads the country in wind energy. We're getting almost 5% of our electricity from wind power, and we're going to see that go to 20%. Over the next 8 years or so. And that is a very simple set of rules and regulations that was signed into law and that has given rise to this huge industry, which actually today is helping hold down the cost of electricity prices here in Texas. One of the things, as everybody knows in Texas, electricity costs have gone up. What you're paying at a retail level has increased. But there would be a bigger increase if there were not as much wind on the system.
some criticisms people have leveled on the wind energy industry is that it receives a lot of subsidies from the government, and that makes it more costly per capita.
Yeah. It's important to look at where do those subsidies go, okay? And I don't know that I call it a subsidy. It's a tax incentive, so you get a tax break when you invest in renewable energy. And what happens is there's a lot of people, there's an active market of people out there building, developing, owning, operating wind projects. They're competing to sell their electricity to people like TXU or Reliant here or Exelon in Chicago or Constellation in Maryland or whoever. And when those different developers and owners of wind energy projects compete with one another, they're selling in a way that they have to pass on the benefit of that tax benefit onto their customers. So what we've seen over the last 10 years that I was in the business is returns respond accordingly. As you have more and more players in the market offering their same product, you compete. You can't keep the benefit of the tax credit yourself. You got to pass it on to your customer, because if you don't, the other party will win and you'll lose the deal.
Okay. Obviously, there's a lot of interest in oil exploration, offshore drilling and whatnot. The Republicans have been making a mantra out of drill here, drill now. What's your take on that and, sort of more broadly on energy policy in general? What should we be doing?
Yeah, okay. So I think there's really three legs to this stool. One is the increase of renewables that we just talked about. The other is, again, coming back to the national security and climate implications of our energy portfolio, the government should have a role in saying, okay, these are the efficiency expectations that we have of automobiles, electric lights, appliances, and so on. So we have to really focus in and on efficiency. And then third, I agree that we need to enhance access and increase access to domestic resources, and those would obviously include offshore resources. We've seen in the Gulf of Mexico that we can safely tap into those resources. We have to be careful about how we do it, but we have an industry that has a tremendous amount of experience in doing that right here in the Gulf, and we can take that experience and use it in other parts of the United States, and I think we can do so safely and effectively. However, the primary reason that I think we should do this is more around the national security and the economic implications of importing foreign oil, okay? Because let's not forget that the United States uses about 25% of the world's oil. We have about 3% of the reserves, okay? So when we drill here and drill now and so on, it's going to be difficult for us as a country with 3% of the reserves, 20% of the demand, to just drill our way out of this problem. So we have to focus on the other parts of the equation. And then finally, when we do enhance U.S. production, let's say that we go from the 7.5 million barrels a day to 10 in this country. We're still trying to move a world market of 80-some million barrels a day, okay? And a couple million barrels a day are not going to move that market as dramatically as I think some people would hope. And when they do move it, it'll be, in the dollars, not tens of dollars, and it won't happen for, 7, 8, 10 years, which is not to say that we shouldn't do it. I don't buy the argument that, it's going to take a while, let's not do anything. Everything in energy takes a while, okay? And in fact, because it does take a while, all the more reason to get going now on all of these fronts.
Okay. Since you've talked national security several times, give me your assessment of, the U.S. situation in Iraq and Afghanistan and, where we should be headed from here.
Yeah, okay. So, first of all, when we invaded Iraq, we did so without proper preparation. I don't think we should have invaded Iraq. I think we should not think that we can go in and take over another country and remake it in our image. However, we are there, and I don't think that we should pull out precipitously and overnight, but we do need to get on board with. I think it's an emerging consensus right now that over the next 18 months we will be able to draw down. The Iraqis believe that. All the presidential candidates are talking about it. It's going to happen. We cannot afford to be spending $12 billion plus a month in Iraq, particularly when the Iraqi government has huge surpluses. This doesn't make any sense at all. And we need to redeploy toward Afghanistan, which is where we should have been focused on to begin with. And, you know, speaking of that, I think that we really have to do a much better job of sticking up for our veterans. And we've seen a Congress that has, you know, people in Congress voted against the GI Bill, voted against rest periods between deployments, voted against a bonus for the troops. And given what these people have done for this country on a voluntary basis, it is appalling that we have not treated veterans better. And so we really have to focus on that today, and we have to make a long-term commitment. Many of the people who've been injured in Iraq, they're going to need a lifetime of care. And we have, as a society, we have to say, hey, we're going to stick with these guys for the long term, and we need to start doing it right now.
You recently released an ad talking about...
Let me just add one other thing on that front of veterans. One of the things that we did at Horizon was, you know, we found, we kind of lucked into this. We went to a few military recruitment fairs thinking that, hey, this would be something that we could do to sort of do our bit. And we hired a bunch of veterans, many of them who had come out of the various academies, and phenomenal folks that have incredible skills in project logistics and management and moving things around and building things and so on. And furthermore, people who really get the, talk about somebody who gets the importance of renewable energy. So I'm proud of what we were able to do as a company, and I know there's a lot of other companies doing similar things, but that has to be our sort of overall attitude as a society about how these folks have served us and what we need to do as a society to do our part.
Okay. You recently released an ad talking about balancing the budget.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit more about that and what you would want to do in Congress to work towards that.
Yeah. Well, first of all, in terms of where I come from, you know, one of my life experiences a number of my life experiences have involved companies that have run very low on money, and one or two of them have involved companies that ran out of money. And when you run out of money in the business world, very bad things happen. You have to come home and tell your spouse that you're not getting paid, okay? And that's a very tough conversation to have. Most people in Washington have never had that sort of experience. So that's kind of where I come from as I think about balancing the budget. And we cannot afford to spend 3-4% of our GDP every single year, money that we don't have or that we're borrowing from the Chinese or other countries. And so we got to get serious about this. This is going to involve a lot of hard choices. But there are, I think part of a lot of the issue here is we've had people in Washington who think it's their job just to vote against things. Well, it is the job of Congress to be the fiduciary of government funds and make sure that the government is run effectively and efficiently, and there's a lot of room for savings there. We're spending billions and billions of dollars on earmarks that don't make any sense at all. We got to eliminate that. I don't buy the argument that people say, well, you know, we're going to spend the money anyhow, so, you know, what the heck, let's just earmark it. Well, then don't spend it to begin with. And at the same time, you see these guys voting for pay raises for themselves. And that's why I say, hey, no, I don't want to, as long as, until we balance this budget, Congress does not deserve a pay raise. And I'm not going to take one.
Okay. Obviously, health care is a big issue in America these days. The Democratic Party platform has placed a big emphasis on it. What kind of health care plan do you want to see come forward in the next Congress? And, you know, what's your vision?
Okay. There's a number of steps that we can take right away. Okay. First of all, with respect to children, we're all paying for uninsured children. Okay. We're all paying for them. And if you're in the business world, you're paying for them through increased premiums for your employees or higher property taxes. And my perspective coming out of the business world is, hey, I'd rather be spending money on $70 inhalers through a children's health insurance program than $7,000 hospital room visits. That's just dollars and cents. It makes sense, and it's the right thing to do. With respect to seniors, there is no reason in the world why the United States of America has to subsidize R&D development of drugs for everybody on the planet. We should be able to import drugs from other countries and pay prices similar to what the people in Canada pay. And all government agencies should be able to negotiate the price of those drugs. So that's on children and seniors. And then, broadly speaking, I think that what McCain is saying in terms of moving toward a long-term strategy of moving more toward a program to where individuals are making health insurance decisions, okay, instead of just employers. I think that the employer-provided model is somewhat anachronistic in the day. You know, we were talking before the interview about companies being bought and sold, people switch jobs all the time. It's anachronistic, or the current program of employer-provided coverage comes out of a time when we had lifetime employment. Well, we don't have lifetime employment anymore in this country. We have a very dynamic labor market. People switch jobs all the time. Liquidity in the labor market is an important thing. So we need a health insurance program that's adapted to that, so that if people switch jobs, or, you know, if they go off to start a job, to start a new company, they should be able to their health insurance should carry with them for a much longer period of time than the typical employment period. And then finally, with respect to what Obama is saying on health, the administrative costs that we're paying right today in for our health insurance are staggering. 25 cents out of every healthcare dollar is going toward administrative costs, and none of us are well served by spending so much money in that area.
Okay. Congressman, you're running against John Culberson, has probably made a lot of noise locally about transportation matters,
yeah.
You know, widening I-10, opposing light rail projects.
Yeah.
Where do you stand on these?
Well, you know, the exciting and wonderful thing about Houston, Texas, we've got 100,000 people moving here every single year, and that's because of the opportunity that the city creates. I don't think we're going to be able to build enough roads to accommodate all these people. So, like many things in life, you need multiple solutions. So we will need roads, and we will need light rail, and we'll need heavy rail. There are many, many cities on this planet, okay, and all of them have figured out that the way you move millions of people around is through a combination of mechanisms, trains, buses, cars, walking, etc. And it is folly for us to think that we will simply pave our way through this challenge. But the good news is it's a growing city, okay? But we will need new ways to move people around. And if you look at some of the areas in this particular district, look at the 290 corridor, think about that. That's a highway, 290, it's about 12 years old, and it is packed to capacity. Okay, you can't build infrastructure fast enough to keep up with this growth. So we need infrastructure that's more flexible and whose capacity can be increased by adding more trains and so on.
Okay. Is there anything you'd like to talk about that I haven't asked you about?
No, I think this covers it. Thank you.
All right. Michael Skelly, thank you very much for talking to me today.
Thank you.